As I mentioned, there is a melody, and you know it actually, a melody for every holiday, which is a symbol of the holiday. Now, this was very, very important, especially in the Central European Ashkenazi Jewry, and sometimes less so in the Eastern European. In the Central European, that means the German tradition actually, it was very, very important that order should be. That means that every holiday should not have its own nusach, but should have a kind of a melody that represents the holiday. Now, of course, in all Jewish traditions, every holiday has its nusach. And that nusach is different from other holidays. Of course, there are groups of holidays, like the Shalosh Regalim, the three festivals, have one kind of a nusach, and the high holidays, the Oshana and Yom Kippur, have a different kind of nusach. And there are things which are common between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. There are things which are common between Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. That is common in all the... but an idea that to have one melody that will be the essence of the entire... prayer, or the entire season, actually, is a idea that started in Germany and went with it to all the Ashkenazi communities that spread out of Germany. Well, the first great communities were on the Rhine River, like in Mainz and in Worms, Regensburg, Speyer, and from there this tradition spread out. And the melodies that were selected are very interesting. Why they were selected? Why these melodies and not any others? The melodies that were selected are parts of prayers which have some significance for this holiday. So we talked about the Sukkot melody. And the Sukkot melody has to do with the shaking of the lulav and the melody is called in various traditions either Shikl Hodu or Shokl Hodu. That you move the lulav in that way. Now what about the Pesach and Shavuot melodies? So if we see the Pesach melody is taken from which place?
Adirhu.
Adirhu, Adirhu, Yivne Beit Ovekaro, Bimera, Bimera, Biyameinu Vekaro, Now, why that melody? Why not any other melody? I mean, you have many melodies that symbolize Pesach, like, for instance, why not Manishtana melody? Or why not Echad Mi Yodea? Why this particular one? Why from the Agadah, anyway? This has something to do, and we discussed it, David and myself, has something to do with the way that the Agadah is structured, and I think you will hear more about that from David. But basically, and you already entered that yesterday, the Haggadah goes from slavery to redemption, that means historical redemption, the redemption from Egypt, and then into the ultimate redemption, that means the coming of the Messiah, or Messianic era for Reform Jewry. Now, the coming of the Messiah, the rebuilding of Israel, rebuilding of the temple, according to the traditional way of thinking about that, was symbolized in Adirhu. Adirhu, the words say, Adirhu, and gives all sorts of titles to God. He is mighty, etc. Lord is mighty. Yivne beito v'karov. He will build his temple very soon. And that was very, very, very important, because that means the last redemption. And that, in the Haggadot, the old Haggadot, until the 16th century, the late 16th century, was the last song of the Haggadah. Later came in Echad Miyodea and Echad Gadya. It was a much later addition to the Haggadah. But the Haggadah finished, the Seder finished with Adirhu. Yivne beito v'karov is a symbol of the ultimate redemption. And so Pesach was understood to be the time of redemption in the future. And this is according to the Talmudic statement, Benisan Nigalu. The people were redeemed in the month of Nisan. Ubenisan yiga'alu, and they will be redeemed in the month of Nisan. So that is a very powerful symbol. In addition to that, there was another thing, and that is that people used to sing the Adirhu in German translation. In a German, Yiddishized German translation. Does anybody know that song? I'm remiss. I wanted to bring it to you, and I forgot to bring it to you. But I will record the German version, and I will send it to you. The German version ends with the word Shira. Or Shiro, actually. Bow thine temple, Shiro.
Yeah, my daughter
said
that. Yes.
Bow thine temple, Shiro. And Shiro, the word Shiro is Old German for soon.
Just mention, if you look in some of the Haggadot, it says that het Baulit.
Yeah.
Baulit.
What did it mean? Sorry, I missed it. Shiro means
your song.
No, just a minute.
German.
Shiro in Old German, Shir. S-C-H-I-E-R. Shir. Shir. Means soon in Old German. It still has this kind of meaning of almost, you know. When you say Shir, it's almost, that means in a minute, in almost, that would happen. So Shir in Old German was very soon.
Even in Dutch, you know, Schier.
Schier.
Yeah?
Schier.
Okay, thank you. So, Baudheim Temple Shiro, now for the Jews, Shiro also meant song. That's where, and because of that, this song, Adirhu, which is related to the redemption and also to the essence of singing for the building of the temple, was very important. It was so important that in German communities, when you went out of the synagogue on Pesach night, the blessing, I mean the greeting that you were greeted, was Bau gut.
That's in Holland also.
Yeah.
Bau gut. Yeah.
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 They still say it.
They still say it. Yes. Some. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you say that you come in the day before the Seder, you know, Bau gut. It's a greeting.
Yeah, very interesting. So that comes from that tradition. And so you can understand now how important that song was. And because of this, of its importance, it became the leitmotif of the... and we have it in early manuscripts of the Haggadot already from the late 17th century manuscript in a version which is not exactly the way we sing it today. But it has the same, most of the motifs are there, but it's somehow different. There were some Haggadot that were printed with music in the late 17th century with a melody. And the melody was this. So it already was considered very, very important. From a structural point of view, this is not a medieval melody, but it comes a little bit later. Comes from late Renaissance or early Baroque. We do not know exactly when, but it became that kind of, since then it became a symbol of the Pesach. So when do you use it? You use it for Micha Mocha, but in Micha Mocha it was used since the 19th century, not earlier. Because, and I don't remember if we discussed that, in Orthodox tradition, you're not allowed to sing Micha Mocha. You're allowed to sing Malchutcha, Ra'u Banecha. Are you allowed to sing anything before the Micha Mocha? But when it comes to Micha Mocha, you're supposed to pray it in a simple way, never sing it to a melody. And the reason for that is that it is related to Az Yashir Moshe. It is taken from the Song of the Sea. And the Song of the Sea begins with Az, then. Yashir Moshe can be understood as in a future tense, Yashir, he will sing. What do you mean? Then, at that time, Moses will sing? It's a biblical past, and I don't want to go into that, but for the rabbis, it meant that Moses will sing then. That means in a time of redemption, Moses will sing that. And then everybody will sing this song of Micha Mocha, which Micha Mocha is the essence of the...
It's an important point that every Orthodox funeral is recited as one of the first proof text of the Tchiyat HaMetim, that the people will arise out of the graves at the time of the Mashiach, because then they will sing. So you have, they had to find in Torah and in the prophets texts that prove that there is life after death. You know, and this is the way they constructed it. So it in that sense, tradition is a very important text, and the future tense is also very important.
But the contents and the location is, I think, very related to the Yetziat Mitzrayim. I mean, in the Olam Haba, or what is
it? No, sorry. It has nothing to do with it. All that's matter of, if you have to find somehow a proof text that the Torah talks about Tchiyat HaMetim, this is the only place you can find where you have a grammatical construction that can be bent to prove that. The rest of the content is totally unimportant, taken away. This is the important point, and that's what comes out in this argument. Yes. Yeah?
Because of that, people refrained from singing Micha Mocha. When does the Micha Mocha, also in the Sephardic movement, in Sephardic Jews, sing, make a big fuss over Ra'u Banim Gevurato. If you go to a big Sephardi synagogue, you can hear great music on Ra'u Banim Gevurato, Shibchu Vodu Lishmo, Umalchuto Beratzon Kiblu Aleim, Moshe Vnei Israel, Lecha Anu Shira, Besimcha Rabba.
Nothing.
Then no Micha Mocha. So Micha Mocha in that leitmotiv began to be sung after the influence of the Reform movement in the 19th century. First it was sung by in the Reform synagogue. It was one of the seminal texts of Reform movement. Micha Mocha, like Shema Israel, etc., was sometimes the only text that was sung in Hebrew. So it became very important. And from there, don't tell it to anybody, but the Orthodox, modern Orthodox Orthodoxy took it and they started singing Micha Mocha in the services. Still, the very Orthodox will never touch it and never do that kind of horrible thing. So you don't have the motive this for Micha Mocha. When do you have it? People used to sing the Hodu and Anna for the Hallel, and sometimes other parts of the Hallel to this melody, like Hallelu et Adonai kol goyim, before the Hodu Adonai Kitov.
In the Bracha, it
was a later kind of thing. But in the early times, they did it in Hodu and Anna. That was and some other parts that the congregational could somehow join in with the Chazan. It was also part of the Rosh Chodesh Benson, which we discussed already, that people inserted that in the either Yechad Shehu at the end, or Misha Asanisim, and especially Misha Asanisim was significant because Misha Asanisim Laavoteinu, the one God who made miracles to our forefathers, and of course the Exodus from Egypt is considered a very important symbol from that point of view. So Misha Asanisim. That was part of the. Of the usage. Also, it served for everybody to remind people that the month of Nisan is approaching, you better prepare for Pesach. So it was also a signal to the congregation, please understand, time is short and you have to clean your houses, etc., and do everything for Pesach. So that was very important. We did not have the same kind of practice for Sukkot. Why? Why couldn't we have the same practice in Sukkot?
Because of all the
Yom Kippur.
And
we do not announce the month of Tishrei.
Yeah.
There's no Rosh Chodesh mentioned before the month of Tishrei. It's the only month in a calendar that doesn't have that. And Sukkot is, of course, part of the Tishrei month. So you couldn't announce the month of Tishrei by doing that. As a matter of fact, the month of Tishrei is announced when you announce the month of Elul.
Yeah.
So when you announce the month of Elul, people use motifs from the Slichot. From the Slichot or from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. It varies in different communities. And they intertwine these motifs into the Birkat HaChodesh so that people understand that now is time for repentance, now is time for returning to Teshuvah.
And Shofar is blown. And Shofar is blown in.
Yeah, the shofar, of course, the shofar is sounded in during the month of Elul, which is also a very powerful symbol of the approach of Rosh Hashanah. So you cannot announce Sukkot. Now you do announce Shavuot.
Yeah, we do announce Sukkot at the end of Ni'ilah in the last Kaddish, the
right.
Kaddish Kabbal, which goes on Sukkot Kaddish.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
Shavuot,
that's very good.
In Yom Kippur, then you have...
Okay, so, so this is about the use of Adyon in Pesach, and I must say that we in Jerusalem have the minhag that in the synagogue at the college, at least, instead of Adon Olam, at the end of the service, on Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbat before Pesach, we sing Ad Yehu. As also a way to announce the coming of Pesach.
But we also have the habit to sing Adon Olam on the melody of the Chag. Is that wrong or?
No, it's not wrong. There's nothing wrong. It's also a way of reminding them. But we decided long ago that we want to have this particular hymn to an entire season of Pesach. So what we do, we start in Shabbat HaGadol and sing Ad Yehu then. Then on all the services of Pesach, we sing Ad Yehu.
Instead of
Adon Olam.
I just want to point out also, at the beginning of the Seder, community Seder, which is what I've been doing most of my life, when people come and they sit down, I always start by singing the first part of Ad Yehu, before anything else. Because, you know, within seconds, you're in the right mood.
That's a good idea.
Everybody is there, and then you can start to say it, but you have it already.
Yeah.
In one synagogue in London, they also sing, instead of Adon Olam Ad Yehu, but in English, in an old English.
God of might. It's a very very interesting translation from the 19th century, actually. God of Might is based on the German German translation, and it's very interesting. Has very interesting ideas there. I don't know if you've ever the Reform movement in Holland sang an Ad Yehu in Dutch. No.
Never heard of it. No. But that doesn't mean anything so much. No.
Yeah.
There's an assignment for somebody.
Well, Joppe, do you know? Ever heard of Ad Yehu being sung in Dutch?
Yeah. Okay. So these are the usages of the motives of Ad Yehu. And now we go to Shavuot. Shavuot has this. The end is a bit different in some communities, but this is basically what the melody is, and it comes from Akdamut.
From what?
Akdamut. Now again, we're awaiting a talk of David's talk about Akdamut. He prepared a piece of paper, and I don't want to belabor it.
I'll send it to you or put it on the net. It's a special poem. You tell them what it is.
Okay. Akdamut is a poem which was written in Mainz in the in medieval time. It's a very long poem. It has in acrostics the name of the poet. Somehow, if it eludes me now, it'll come back, I'm sorry. And it has an entire alphabet, 22 letters, with the words in Aramaic. The entire poem is Aramaic, very difficult Aramaic. Akdamut milin v'shara yushuta avla shakilna harman urshuta. And it has all the entire enormous poem, very long one, ending with a rhyming ta, taf aleph. Well, of course, it is also symbolic, the last word, and the first word of the alphabet, etc. I don't want to go into all the symbols of this Akdamut. He talks about the Torah, the giving of the Torah, and then the merits of those who study the Torah, and it ends with the end of days when all those people will be very happy in the times of Messiah, and they will partake in the great feast with the Shor Habar and Leviathan. Shor Habar is the great ox that everybody will eat, except the vegetarians, I suppose, on the days to come, and the Leviathan, the great fish. The text is really, if you understand it, is very, very beautiful. But it is very, very difficult from a linguistic point of view. People do not understand it, mostly. And therefore, in the Reform movement, from the beginning, they started to shorten it or to take it out altogether of the service. Now, I don't know what the practice here...
Which is when Petra and others don't know what it is and never heard of it.
When was it recited?
Okay,
that's the point. Do you want to
elaborate?
Go ahead.
Okay. Originally, it was recited after during the first Aliyah to the Torah. After the first verse, immediately after the first verse. So the order of things was
on Shavuot. I spoke about this morning. I mentioned it.
Yes.
Yeah. The Kohen is called up. Bracha, first Pasuk, and then they stop it and they do the Akdamot. You'll hear why in a moment.
Okay. So the first verse of the reading for Shavuot goes Bachodesh Hashvi'i Letzet Bnei Israel Me'eretz Mitzrayim Bayom Haze Ba'u Midbar Sinai. In other words, it declares that the month of Sivan, the third month, on that day, that means the first of the month of Sivan, the Israelites came to the desert of Sinai. They came close to the Mount Sinai. And the entire Torah reading talks about the Theophany on Mount Sinai, etc., etc. But you stop after the Bayom Hazeh Ba'u Midbar Sinai, and then all of a sudden you have this long, long poem. It takes about 20 minutes to read. And to chant, actually, it's always chanted. And then it started to think, well, what is this business? And of course there were many, many problems with this poem, and lots of disputes about whether you should do it and what kind of minhag is that. In Israel now they refrain from doing it this way. You read the Akdamut before the first Aliyah to the Torah, or you call up the Kohen who comes up over the first, and then after calling up the Kohen, before the Kohen says the blessings, you read the entire poem, because it's a big pause in the entire reading. But it turns out that the reason why it was done is that in early medieval times, it was a practice to read a verse and a translation into Aramaic. Every portion of the Torah was read first in Hebrew, then in translation. So if you got an Aliyah, you would read the first verse. After that, somebody else, a meturgeman, a translator, would translate into Aramaic, the Torah into Aramaic, into the Targum Onkelos, or another Targum. I'm sorry. Targum and translation.
Official translation. Official translations are two, Targum Onkelos, Targum Yonathan, yeah, which you often find together with the Hebrew text.
But it's like a translation into
Aramaic with a commentary built in. How to understand the text properly.
So it's translated into Aramaic, and could you mention the word again?
Yeah. This is still the practice in the Yemenite... In the Yemenite communities, it is still this practice. that you are called up to the Torah. Usually the one who is called up to the Torah also reads the Torah. And he reads a verse. And when he finishes a verse, then in a congregation, a boy, usually a boy, reads from the Onkelos translation, Aramaic translation. Now this practice goes on in spite of the fact that people understand more Hebrew than Aramaic. They understand much less Aramaic. So it was originally was the idea of getting to people to understand. Like if you translate your verse and translate it into Dutch for the Dutch Jewry.
It actually goes back to Ezra, who read publicly the first time, and there were people standing next to him translating for the people who didn't understand the Hebrew.
Yeah, that was a common practice, and it remains only in the Yemenite synagogue. Now, the Aramaic translation is not understood, but it is a custom, and you cannot change. So, everybody says the translation without understanding the translation, the purpose of it, the practical purpose of it is out, but maybe there is a kind of a mystical purpose that they pursue, and it's a mitzvah like that, you cannot change it, and that's it. And that was the situation in the German synagogues in early medieval times. And in medieval times, this poem, served as a big preface for the translation into Aramaic of the Torah. It was a glorification of that kind of translation into Aramaic. In the meanwhile, in German, and we're talking about the usual practice, that means orthodoxy, they somehow forgot this practice. And we don't hear about it anymore. We don't hear it from very early times. But what remained is this poem. The translation is gone.
So you read, that's why you read the one verse and then you get this poem. Which is where the translation would come otherwise.
And nowadays in the Orthodox synagogues they do it before the first Aliyah.
In Orthodox becoming stricter and stricter and stricter, and there's a halachic problem where you should or should not read it. In the middle of an aliyah, that is a hefsek, and you cannot do that. It's a pause in between of the reading, and so there was a big quarrels about that. And David prepared a paper about one of these quarrels in Italy in the 18th century. The Italians loved to quarrel about these things. The Italian Jews were wonderful about these things.
You had some.
What is the source that in Germany it was done to medieval times? From where do you know?
We have it, we understand it from the way manuscripts were set with translations. And I don't know exactly where I can't refer you to a particular source right now, but when I go home I can write to you where this comes from, where we know about it. But in any case, it is clear that the only thing that remained is that poem, nothing remained of the translation. But the poem still exists, and you cannot change a minhag like that. Although it takes a long time into the service, and it also does what is considered a terrible thing, and that is me'akevet kriyat ha-Torah. That means it postpones the Torah reading. That is considered a bad habit. In spite of that, it's like that. All right, so why do I bring all this story? Because of the melody. There are two melodies to Akdamut. One is a psalmodic melody, which goes like this. Akdamut milin v'shara yeshuta av lashakel na harma nushuta. Bevavu treyut lade yeftach benakshuta bevare vetare adead lekashishuta gevuran lal min levelasapek kulkashna, etc. It goes on and on like that. da 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 da. And it continues for the entire poem like this. So this is a motive which is also was considered a seasonal motive, and perhaps this was the seasonal motive until the 18th century. It is still the motive for Shavuot in the Eastern Ashkenazi synagogues, that means in Russia and Poland and so on. However, something happened in the 18th century. We do not know exactly when, we do not have sources exactly, but the melody itself, the type of melody, looks like either late 17th century or 18th century, and people started singing Akedamut milin veshara yashota Arashakel arman shota Arashakel arman shota. And then the melody was repeated again. And this became the staple melody for Shavuot. Now, what happened was that in the Reform movement, Akdamut was taken out and the melody remained. Where did melody remain? In Micha Mocha. Some sing it also in Hodu and Anna.
Standard
melody. Standard. I mean
the recognition melody. When you hear it, you know it's Shavuot.
Yeah. Some call these melodies leitmotifs. I don't like this. Leitmotif has something to do with a different concept by Wagner, and I don't. It doesn't work very well with this kind of thing. So, the Akdamut itself is gone in a Reform movement. And the only thing that remains is using the Akdamut melody in various places in the service. Now, how do you use this melody? Oh, look at that.
And the Anas and the Hodus. And in the Rosh Chodesh mentioned before, like this morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here is the old melody. Odu l'Adonai ki to ki le'olam chasdo. Do you use this melody?
Yes.
Yeah, we have used it.
It was brought here by every tract.
Okay, so every tract came from the Eastern European tradition.
Yes.
And he brought it from the Eastern synagogue, from the Eastern...
From the American synagogue.
And here is Ana Adonai in the same way. Ana Adonai Hoshiana, Ana Adonai Hoshiana, Ana Adonai Hoshiana, Adonai Hoshiana, Ana Adonai, the same, Atzlichana, Ana Adonai Atzlichana, and then he ends, Ana Adonai. Okay, because you have to be tonal in, this is, the melody is not in, it's not A major melody.
It's like the Audrey Fort and Protesa.
Yeah, Protesa, yeah. So, again, Odu l'Adonai ki tov, ki l'olam chasdo, with the same melody. So, Avery brought it back from the Eastern European tradition. So, it may have been the case that in earlier times, this was sung here, that means in Central Europe, with this melody.
But that's one of the things that we were fighting with Avery about, because we want to have our Shavuot melody.
Okay.
Zachul Latov.
Okay, so I don't want to go into...
I like the fact.
These details about what was going on in the synagogue while every tract was here, I don't want to go into these details, but what I want to go into is that indeed you still use this melody, but somewhere else. Can you remember where you use this melody? You can't remember that. I'm surprised.
Yes. The first word, first letter. Sounds like.
Sounds like you're well, you know, are we in a television kind of
Yeah.
sounds like yeah. But I must ask, especially Petra, about that.
Yes, I'm working, but.
You're working, but yesterday you sang it. You did sing it. You are guilty of singing it yesterday. Exactly.
Ah, okay.
Asher bachar banu mikol ha'am ve'romemanu mikol lashon ve'kideshanu be'mitzvotav.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a kiddush composed in the with motifs of Agamot.
Yeah, but it's done in all the kiddushim of the Shalosh Regalim, regardless of the
Shalosh Regalim.
Oh, it's done on Pesach, on Shavuot, and Sukkot, and in some places also on Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
It is not done on Yom Kippur.
And we have the Rosh Hashanah also.
And so it was transferred from Shavuot to the Kiddush. Where else is it chanted? I do not know if you do that, but you have the calling up of the important people to the Aliyot on Simchat Torah. You have Chatan Torah and Chatan Bereshit. Chatan Torah is the one who is called up for the last Aliyah of the Torah. And then immediately after that, you call up Chatan Bereshit to begin the Torah again. Right? And as you call the Chatan Torah, there is a long formula for calling up Chatan Torah. Now, do we have the formula here?
Yes, I gave you the papers yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
They're in the list of the papers I gave you yesterday.
Now, what David did with his formula, it is a very long, very, very long, it's called Reshut Lechatan Torah. Reshut Lechatan Torah.
Do you want to go and get them?
The way you do it, you use this melody of the old melody of Akdamut, and you sing this is actually a poem. It is rhymed on a ra reish hay, mirshut ha'el ha'gadol gibo ve'hanora eftach pi uvirshut mipaz yikara. אפתח פי בשירה ובזמרה, להודות להלל לדר בן הורה, שהחיינו וקיימנו בירתו הטהורה. Why all these ra things? It's not ra, reish ayin, which is bad, but ra at the end of Torah. So שמחת תורה. והגיענו לשמוח בשמחת תורה. So because of that, you have a long poem, and the original poem is much, much longer than what you have here, which is to call up Chatan Torah, and you do it as follows, and I'm doing the text that David edited. Mirshut ha'el ha'gadol ha'gibor ve'anora u'mirshut mipaz u'mipninim yekara eftach pi b'shira u'v'zimra le'odot u'le'alel le'dar bin hora she'chiyanu ve'kiymanu ויראתו התאורה, והגיענו לשמוח בשמחת התורה. המשמחת לב ועיניים מאירה, הנותנת חיים ואושר וכבוד ותפארה, המאשרת הולכיה בדרך הטובה והישרה, המערכת ימים ומוספת גבורה, לאוהביה ולשומריה בציווי והזהרה, לעוסקיה ולנוצריה באהבה ובמורה. ובכן יהי רצון מלפני הגבורה, לתת חיים וחסד ונזר ועטרה. ליצחק בן אברהם ושרה, הנבחר להשלים התורה, עמוד, עמוד, עמוד. יצחק בן אברהם ושרה, חתן התורה, ותן כבוד לאל גדול ונורא. And sometimes you add, ובשכר זה תזכה מאל נורא, לראות בנים ובני בנים עוסקים בתורה. יעמוד יצחק בן אברהם ושרה, חתן התורה. Okay, now,
we have this one.
In the spirit of, just a minute, in the spirit of liberal thinking, David decided that we also have a kalat Torah, the possibility of kalat Torah. Therefore, he changed the end so that it would be שרה בת יצחק ואברהם, הנבחרת להשלים התורה, עמדי, 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 שרה בת אברהם ויצחק, קלת התורה, ותני כבוד לאל גדול ונורא, ובשכר זה תזכי מאל נורא, לראות בנים ובני בנים עוסקים בתורה. תעמוד שרה בת יצחק, בת אברהם ויצחק, קלת התורה.
It's an interesting combination, the daughter of Abraham and Yitzhak, yeah.
Yeah, right, okay. So the same thing goes for Chatan Bereshit. Again, what you have here is the text that David edited. First of all, he shortened it, and then he inserted some ideas which are more in line with modern ideas of the Reform movement and Jewry in general. And so what we have is the following. Me'ereshut meromam al kol beracha veshira, nora al kol tehila vezimra, chacham leivav ve'amitz koach u'gvura, ומושל עולם אדון כל יצירה, ומרשות כבודה בת מלך בתנימה עצורה, ברא תמימה משיבת נפש ומחזירה, ומרשות חבורת צדק עידה מאושרה, קבוצים פה היום לשמחת תורה, ונעצרים לסיים ולאחל בגיל ובמורה, ובכן נסכמתי דעת כולם לבררה. בחור הרימותי מעם תוך החבורה, מצאתי לב נכון להסבירה. צדק וחסד רודף באורח ישרה, ונשאו ליבו ונדבה רוחו להתעוררה. תחילה וראשון היות להתחיל התורה, יען נעשה את הראשון למצווה גמורה, מרב טובך ומשכורתך יתרה, עמוד, עמוד, עמוד. יצחק בן אברהם ושרה, חתן בראשית ברא, מרשות הקהל הקדוש הזה, לברך אל גדול ונורא, אמן, יענו אחריך הכל מהרה. יעמוד יצחק בן אברהם ושרה, חתן בראשית ברא.
In the thing, you also have a translation, which I sometimes also read when I call up, because it's...
So in the same way, you have the text for Kalat Torah, and it's the same melody. Now, if you do all this melody many, many times, and it's repeated again and again, you can try to insert some variation in it. So you'll do it, for instance, if we go back to Chatan Torah, Mereshut Ha'el HaGadol VeHaNora, U'Mereshut Mipaz U'Mipninim Yekara, Eftach Pi V'Shira U'V'Zimra, Le'odot U'Lehalel Ledar Binora, Shechayanu V'Kimanu Birato HaTorah, V'Higianu Lismoach בשמחת התורה המשמחת לב ועיניים מאירה הנותנת חיים ואושר וכבוד ותפארה המאשרת הולכיה בדרך הטובה והישרה המערכת ימים ומוספת גבורה etc. So you can do some variations on that melody in order to relieve the tediousness of repetition. So this melody of Akdamut is still with us, but in a disguise. It's in this, in Reshut L'Chatan Torah, Reshut L'Chatan Bereshit, it is in the Kiddush. But on Shavuot, what you do is you sing the other melody for Akdamut. This became so seasonal that in some congregations, especially in the United States, for a while, I don't know if it's still like that, it became also the main melody for confirmation. Mm-hmm. Because confirmation was done on Shavuot. Or during the season of Shavuot,
no, because of Ruth.
On the holiday with,
Because of Ruth.
No, because of the receiving of the Torah.
Receiving of the Torah, Torah. Mm-hmm. And of course because it's seasonal too. It was somehow connected with these two ideas. So,
anybody here been confirmed? Confirmation, I have. We still did it in Sweden, yes. Yeah. Age 16.
Yeah. I have associations with melodies outside of the Jewish world, but perhaps composed by Eastern Ashkenazi people. It's canon. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, but I doubt that it's the Akdamut. I really don't know. It seems that says that it's a very old melody, that it is not a tonal melody that you would think about during the development of tonality. We're talking about it from the end of the Renaissance to it's much older. It's modal. It has modality. It's a very very. If it related anything in non-Jewish world, it's related to somehow to patterns that you can find in Gregorian chant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Gregorian chants of the Psalms.
Yeah. So
it's of course a little bit minor.
Could I ask something else, because you said it before? The Kiddush you sang yesterday, that is different from the Tucker that Chaim sings on the CD, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a different one.
We have another.
Because then we need your...
I can't remember now which one is. Does he sing? Yeah.
The Kiddush that Chaim sings, the Tucker.
That is a Kiddush that was gesungen by Richard Tucker, an opera singer.
In English,
Richard Tucker was an opera singer, but also a very accomplished chasm.
Yeah.
And
just the melody.
He sang this melody. Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam More more dari agaf and big orchestra.
How does it continue?
Yes, this was Chaim. That was on the CD. What Chaim sings.
A little bit simpler.
Eloheinu melech haolam Asher kideshanu mitzvotav.
No, no, it's Asher bachar banu mikol am.
No.
Yours is much more. This is what I'm used to. Abra had the Anglo-Saxon one, which is again different. But yours is more Shalosh Regalim than this one. Yeah. So I would like you to sing it later on.
Yes, and I would like to have it.
Yes.
The record on which he sings it.
Because I know this
called,
one.
I beg your pardon. The Passover Seder Festival.
Yeah.
He is on the sleeve. Oh, yeah. And it's a musical.
The musical rendition of the Seder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The music for yours, I think it's in the Reconstructionist Haggadah, in the Open Door.
Okay, I have it
one
here.
One of the American.
Okay.
Yes,
the Open Door.
The Open Door. The
Open Door is a Reform one, but I have both here.
So
we can have a look at them. Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it the one that Petra sent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Quite in the same way.
Okay.
Where did she learn?
The only thing I was taught to do it on the High Holidays. So,
what?
And then I realized one day when I got rid of my own knowledge myself that it wasn't at all High Holidays. So,
no, but people still do it on Rosh Hashanah.
Because the text I have is noted with the High Holidays.
But you can
So it's completely High Holidays.
But you can you use the same for the Chagim for Rosh Hashanah. For Yom Kippur, you have a different kiddush.
Oh my God!
You with your kiddush, it's an obsession.
Why? We have lunch.
I'll tell you why.
Oh.
In California, yeah. I saw this Californian Jewish cookery book with the recipes for Yom Kippur.
No kidding.
For going into Yom Kippur and for coming out of Yom Kippur. But when I first saw it, recipes for Yom Kippur. Kosher, no.
By the way, if you're already talking about that, Petra, one of the things that I was very impressed with the museum, the Jewish Museum in Amsterdam, was there is a series of videos that you can see. People are interviewed in the videos, and one of the interviews which impressed me very much was somebody who talks about Yom Kippur customs in Amsterdam before the war.
Yes.
It's fantastic. And what he says is the following. He comes from a merchants, people of merchants. And on Yom Kippur, he describes, or she describes, can't remember, he describes that, of course, all the shops were closed. And why were all the shops closed on Yom Kippur? Because all the merchants went to a restaurant to have a great feast, a great meal of Yom Kippur in the restaurant. And there is a description of that and how that was considered the greatest day of the year for them. All the Jewish merchants